All right, we're going to start on the top of Mem Vav Amud Aleph. Just to review here, we have the Mishnah, which discusses about divorcing one's wife because of the issue, either Mishum Neder or Mishum Shemra, either because she's taking the Darim or because she is, there's Laz, right? There is rumors spreading about her. And there, the Gemara discussed, the first part of the Gemara discussed Rav Yosef Bar Nimnumi, two possibilities of what the issue is. Why do we say lo yachzir? Why do we say that we do not allow him to remarry such a woman when he divorces her? Two possibilities. The first possibility is mishum kilkula, right? We're worried about the fact that if he later regrets having divorced her because of the premise of neder or the premise of motzi shemra, then he can say, you know what, it was actually a gerushin betos, it was a mistake. And that's because we saw in the Gemara, this is what Rav Yosef Ben-Numi says, that he explicitly says, the reason I'm divorcing you is because of this neder, or because of this shemra. And therefore, by putting that explicit condition in there, then when that condition fails, or he finds out later on that he could have somehow removed her, it wasn't true, that would be okier the get, or make the get invalid, and that'll cause us problems if this woman goes ahead and remarries. That's one possibility of the tikkun olam is mishum kilkula. The other possibility was, and we saw this was an ikad amri, in the lashon of Rav Yosef Ben-Numi, was the problem of shalei lo yehi benot yisrael putzot barayot benedarim, that we didn't want the benot yisrael. This is actually a punishment to the woman rather than a protection for the woman. According to the shum kilkula, it was a way to protect the woman. Once he divorces her, he should know, when you divorce her, this is final. There's no way to retract this because we don't want problems arising. And the second law shown, the truth is that he could return her, but we don't want him returning her because we want her to know the severity of that which she is, right, being involved with. The fact that there are rumors circulating about her, the fact that there are, she's taking the darim, these are serious offenses, and since they're serious offenses, the Chachamim wanted to make the consequences serious as well. And the consequences being serious means that once he divorces you for these issues, that's it. That's the end of your marriage. It's dissolved, and he can't take you back, even if you somehow, right, are able to rectify these issues. So it was a preventative measure in order that the benot yisrael should not be putzot v'areyot u'nedarim. These were the two lashonot we saw in Rav Yosef Bar Nimyumi. Now the Gemara is going to say we have breitot that support these two positions. So that's going to support 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines down. 9 lines down in the Gemara on Mem Vav Anavo. Tanya Kalishna Kamo. Tanya Kalishna Batro. We have a breitot that supports the first law shown in Rav Yosef Bar Nimyumi, which is, what's the first law shown? That it was a issue of Mishum Kilkula. And we have a Tanya, a Braisa, that supports the second Lashon, which was, it was an issue of Mishum Prutzot. So Tanya Kalishna Kam, we have a Braisa that supports the first position, Amar Rabbi Meir, Mipnei Ma Amru Amotzi Et Ishto Mishum Shemra Lo Yachzir. Why did you not return it? Umishum Neder Lo Yachzir. Why in these two instances we say that he cannot remarry once he divorces her for these issues? Shema Telech Vitina Selacher, because maybe she will go then and marry another person. And then he'll find out that either the rumors were false, or, you know, with regards to a nether, they could have somehow dissolved or removed the nether. But Yomer, Ilu Aiti Yodea Shukain Hu, had I known this was the case, if they give me a ton of money, Lo Aiti Migarsha, I would never have divorced this woman. Then we see what that's retroactively going to invalidate the get. Upanea mamzerim, and now her children from this next marriage are going to be mamzerim because she never really was divorced. Lo, we speak to the husband and say to him, Have yodea shamotziat ishto mishum shemra. Someone who divorces his wife because of shemra, lo yachzir. That's it. It's a permanent issue. It's a permanent solution. I mean, divorce is a permanent solution. You cannot rectify or reverse it. Shum neder lo yachzir. Also, if it's because of a neder, we will not allow you to remarry. So based on that, that supports the first lesson, which says the issue that we're worried about in this instance is kilkula. Because of kilkula, we do not allow him to remarry. Now, Tanya Kalishna Batro, we have a braisa that supports the second lashon of Rabbi Yosef Ben-Numi, which says it's probably Mishum Prutzot. Amar Rabbal Oza B'Rabbi Yosi, Mipnei Ma'amru Amotzi Et Ishto Mishum Shemro Lo Yachzir. Why do we say this? Mishum Neder Lo Yachzir. So these women should not take lightly such offenses. The fikach, omrim lo, we say to the husband, emor lo, say to her. I mean, we direct the issue of him not returning her to her. And because of that, we are never going to be married again because of this issue. And again, it was a dissuasion or a preventative measure to women should know that if because of their actions that caused a divorce, that would have serious consequences, right, and be a deterrent to them getting involved or having these issues come about. I mean, that it should prevent them from making the darim or getting involved in precarious situations which could lead to rumors or being prutzot barayot that could lead to such rumors. So it was a preventative measure. All right, now the Gemara is going to discuss the other opinions in our Mishnah, which is, what's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? Now, Rabbi Yehuda says that the problem, or he says that the only time that he cannot reverse the issue of divorce is when it's a case of neder shiyadu bo rabim. That was a neder al das rabim, and not an a neder that she'en yadu bo rabim. What's unusual about a neder al das rabim? So we've seen this before, earlier in the Masechta, that a neder al das rabim is something that does not have hafara. Right? They don't have the ability to be mefer or even possibly mati or such a neder. Because of that, it's a much more serious neder. I mean, it's this much more serious, quote-unquote, offense of nedarim. And we know that Rabbi Yehuda believes, or the problem in our Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not a problem of kilkula, but rather a problem of prutzot v'nedarim and prutzot barayot. So Rabbi Yehuda sets the standard by where, what is the standard by which a woman is considered to be prutzot v'nedarim? So what's the standard prutzot v'nedarim? Is it was a neder al dat rabim. So now, where does Rabbi Yehuda know such a thing that you cannot have a furrow, you cannot reverse, or hataras nedarim, with regards to a neder that was done al dat rabim? So that's what Gemara says. So the way Rashi formulates it, it's an interesting formulation. He says that the problem is that we say that gali date, when we tell him no, that when you divorce her now, you cannot reverse it. That means that gali date, this is the way I'll read your lashon Rashi, the gali date lo chaviva love kule hai, that she's not so beloved to him. Right, the whole problem we think here is that, oh, she's so beloved to me, I would not divorce her had I known this information. So basically we say to him, listen, you know the information now. Even if you find out that it's not true, your divorce will remain final. And if he says, afal pikein, basically he goes in and divorces anyway, then he's saying, basically, I'm divorcing her irrespective of the issue of neder and irrespective of the issue of shemra, because we've taken away that his ability to use that as a tenai. So because of that, then the divorce becomes final. Okay. Sure. So Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, my time with Rabbi Yehuda. What's the position of Rabbi Yehuda? Dechtiv. This is by Yoshua. This is by the Givonim. The Givonim come and they trick Bnei Yisrael and Yoshua into creating a peace treaty with them. So despite the fact that they're part of the Shiva Umamot, right, and that they were not, right, we were not supposed to have peace with them, they pretend to be from very far away, and then they make a Shavua, they basically take a Shavua to the Givonim that they will not kill them. So it says later at the end of that parak, it says, after Bnei Yisrael find out that they were tricked, they go to their cities and they basically occupy their cities. And it says over there, "Dichtiv lohi kum Bnei Yisrael." Bnei Yisrael do not kill them. Why? Ki nishbeu lahem nisiei aida, because the nisiim had taken a shvuah not to kill them, and because of that shvuah, which is a shvuah dat rabim, then the shvuah dat rabim, it doesn't have a tar, it doesn't have a farah, so they had to uphold the shvuah. I mean, had they had the ability to be mefer or matir such a neder, they would have done so, and then they could have killed them. The fact that they didn't take that option up shows you that you can't be mefer or be matir such a neder. Now, what about the Rabbanon? The Rabbanon argue in Rabbi Yehuda and say you can be matir such a neder. What do they say? Yeah. It sounds like yes. But let's assume. It sounds like they even if they offered. You know what? If you hold the question for 1 second, I'm going to come. There's a very important Tosfos here about some of the issues that you're mentioning here. If we don't answer in the Tosfos, then we can discuss it again. Okay, Rabbanon, the Rabbanon that argue with Yehuda say you can't be matir or mefer such a neder. Hatam michala shvua ilayu. Is the shvua really working? Why? Because it was a shvua b'taut. It was a mistaken shvua. Michala shvua ilayu klau came in damer luhu me'eretz rechoka banu. They lied and said we came from a faraway land. Velo bo. Right? They didn't come from a faraway land. So the underlying premise of the shvua was mistaken, and that's a shvua b'taus. Lo chayla shvua ilayu klau. There is no shvua here. According to the Rabbanon, there is no shvua here. Ah, so now how do you explain the pasuk v'lo hikum? Why did they kill them then? If there's no shvua, if the shvua wasn't enforced, why did they just kill out the givonim? Behind the lo katlinu is such an important lesson. Mishum kedusha d'ashem. Say, because it was a chil Hashem. If they killed them, other nations, other people knew that they had signed a peace treaty with them. And even though, quote-unquote, the peace treaty was invalid because of this lie, other people would not respect that, you know, petach. And because they wouldn't respect that petach, they would think that the Jews, right, go back on their word, that they don't uphold their word. And therefore it would be a chilul Hashem if they went and killed the Givonim. The problem was not the Shavua that prevented them, it was rather the chilul Hashem that prevented them from going ahead and killing the Givonim. Alright, I'm just going to finish up to the two dots, and then we'll come back and discuss this a little more. The Kama Rabim, when is it considered a Rabim? Aldat Rabim. So Rav Nachman Amar Shlosha, that three people are considered Rabim. Rav Yitzchak Amar Asara, 10 people are considered Rabim. Why is that? Nachman Amar Gimo, because it says, we learn in other places, when we have a drusha, this happens to be a drusha with something, nothing to do with our sugya at all, right? But it's by a zava. It says, Yamim means two, Rabim means three. So we see the definition of the word Rabim. In other contexts, this means three. So when you talk about Shvu'al, that's Rabim, it means the definition that we have in other places for Rabim. What's Rabim? Three in other places. So that's what we require over here is three. Rizak Amar Asara. It says 10, Dechtiv Eida. Over here it says the Nisiei Eida took the Shvu'a. And we know the definition of Eida in other places in the Torah. We learn that from the Meraglim. And that's how we know about a minion. It's 10. So 10 is the requirement, and that would be the requirement for Adat Rabim. To be considered that Rabim would have to be in front of 10 people. Now, it's a very, very important Tosfos over here. It's Kaven the Amru Me'eretz Rechuka. That Tosfos. Tosfos asks a very basic question. He says, what happens even if the Shavua wasn't made on a false premise? Even if it was not a Ta'ut, why is the Shavua Chal over here? This is a Shavua Levatel Et HaMitzvah. What mitzvah? That is Lo Techaye Kol Neshama. You're not allowed to leave any of these Shiva Umamot alive. So here you take a Shavua Levatel Dover Shabbaton. We know already that you can't take a Shavua, right? Amashakot. Right. Can't be, take a Shavua on something that is Omeid Me Har Sinai, right? So if it's already Omeid Me Har Sinai, you have a Lochum. How could you be Oker such a mitzvah? So Tosfos gives an answer which we've seen before in Tosfos, which is the first answer. And Tosfos starts to discuss this issue, which is that there is an ability to have shalom with the Shiva Umamot. That Yeshua actually opened his opening salvo before going to battle in Eretz Yisrael. He offered the people in Eretz Yisrael three choices. He said, you can leave, right? You can fight, or you can make peace with us. You have those three options. So how could Yeshua offer them peace if it says, Lo techayeh kol neshama? So Tosfos differentiates before they cross the Yarden and after they cross the Yarden. Again, Tosfos does this in other places. Which is that prior to crossing the Yarden, there was an option for the Shiva Umamot to make peace with the Jews. Once Bnei Yisrael crossed over the Yarden, then there's a requirement of Lo Techayeh Kol Neshama, that you can't leave anybody alive. So Tosfos points out in our case, guess what? They were already across the Yarden when this happened. They had already destroyed Yericho and Ai, and when the Givonim come to them, they're already on the other side of the Yarden. So how again could they create such a peace? But once they go into land, they can't. So Tosfos amends this and says, you know what? Even after they cross the Yarden, they are able to make peace. And why is that? He says, "V'yesh lomar dar korchach be'ein rutzim l'shlim k'tiv lo techayeh kol neshama." The context in which the pasuk lo techayeh kol neshama is a case where it was a case where they didn't want to make peace. Couldn't muchay cry because the pesukim are obvious, right? In the parsha, why it says v'karata aleh l'shalom v'lo techshlim imcha, you'll call that a peace. If they don't make peace with you, you'll lay siege. Rak me'arei amim, lo techayeh kol neshama. So he says, if you look at the progression of the psukim there, it seems to be the progression of the psukim, the lo techayeh kol neshama, is a conclusion to the previous statement of that they didn't want to have peace with you. And based on that, Tosfos says that you could have peace with the Shiva Umamot. If they agreed to have peace, they were able to, you know, make shalom with you, you would not have the requirement of lo techayeh kol neshama. Now, Tosfos says, well, based on this, what does that mean? Now, we had earlier one of the proofs, I think, Josh, this is what you were asking before. It says, right, Lo yeshvu ba'artzecha, pen yachtio t'chalib, kiach, right, the puzzle that we had yesterday, which said that what? That it seems to be that the Shiva almost were ovdei oved kochavim. I mean, that's the interpretation of the puzzle is because they were oved over those kochavim. Mashma, that had they mimikabel on themselves not to worship over those kochavim, that they would not be a requirement, right, that to kill them out. I mean, if they're chozer b'tshuva, that we would be mekabel them, even though the pasuk's talking about the Zayin Umamot. That's Tosfos' conclusion. Tosfos' conclusion is that you can make peace with a Zayin Umamot if they are not of the Avodah Zarah, meaning they do tshuva or they want to be Mitzgayer, and they're willing to have Shalom. Tosfos in other places only makes a distinction before crossing the Yarden and after crossing the Yarden and leaves it there. Here Tosfos takes a step further and says, even after they cross the Yarden, there's this ability to make peace with the Shiva Umamot, and if they're willing to be Mitzgayer or they're willing to do tshuva and not be of the Avodah Zarah, that we would be willing to accept them in that case. Now, the question is, well, what about, had it not been for the Chilul Hashem aspect of it, right, that sounds like we would have killed them out, right? Well, why is that? Why would we have killed them out? I mean, it sounds like the only thing preventing us from killing them was the Chilul Hashem. But, if according to what Tosfos is saying, that you could make peace, meaning that why wasn't it a Shavua La'akar Dover Shabbat Torah, is because they could have made peace with them. So now the Givonim tried to make peace, they're offering themselves up, they say we won't worship Avodah Zarah, whatever they say, how could the option be to kill them versus Chilul Hashem? So Tosfos says, you know what, that was off the table. They actually couldn't have killed them. They couldn't have killed them because they sued for peace or they came to be Mitzgayer. The reason that what? The reason that, or what the Chilul Hashem would have been was that they could have thrown them out. They could have removed them from the cities, they could have thrown them out of the country. They may not have been able to kill them, but they could have forcibly, you know, deported them or moved them somewhere else. And that was the Chilul Hashem that they were worried about. So it's a big chiddush here in Tosfos, a number of chiddushim. One chiddush is that you could have shalom with the Shiva Umamos, assuming that either they came to meet Gaia or they're willing to give up the Avodah Zarah. And number two is once they do that, you may not kill them. Not only right are you have to accept them, but you may not kill them. And again, you can maybe remove them, you could change them around, deport them, whatever you want to do, but you could not kill them at that point because that would be considered a Chilul Hashem to do such, to be violate that contract or the treaty that you would sign with them in those instances. So that's Josh, I hope that answers the question that you were asking before. So now, the next issue in the Gemara is we had Rabbi Meir's opinion, and we had the opinion of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Meir says that all neder that requires a chakiras chacham, requires a taras nedarim, then lo yachzer, then that's knocked out, and he has to, there's a permanent divorce. Whereas if he could be made for it himself, then there's no permanent divorce. Rabbi Elazar says, lo asr zel mi pnei zeh. We only asked one because of the other. So what's their machlokas? What's the basis of their machlokas? That's what I want to know. Rabbi Omer, kol neder shetarach. Tanya, Rabbi Elazar Omer, lo asr tzarach mi pnei sheno tzarach. What's the argument between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir savar adam rotze shitit baze ishto bebezden, that a person is willing to have his wife be embarrassed and, you know, go out into the public sphere in order to get a taras nedarim in Bezden, or to go around to Bezden to get a taras nedarim. So because of that, Rabbi Meir thinks which is the problematic of the two nedarim. He thinks that a neder that she takes that requires a taras nedarim is a problem, because the husband will say, guess what, I would have taken you to Bezden. If I knew I could get a taras chachamim, I would have said, take her out, you know, okay, let's get this Ataras Nedarim. And therefore, he could have reversed the get, or he could put a Tanai in the get. And because of that, we say that invalidates, or in that case, he cannot return the woman, lo yachzir, because this is a place where you can have kilkula. Right? It's clear that's where Rabbi Meir is after, is Mishom kilkula. Velazo, on the other hand, says, Ein adam rotzir shitit vazeh ishto bebezdin. The person doesn't want his wife to be embarrassed to take her out in Bezdin. And therefore, when you have a nether that requires Ataras Nedarim, the husband can't say, had I known there could have been a taras nedarim, I would never have divorced her, because he would have divorced her anyway. Because he wouldn't have been willing to take her out to Beis Din and have the taras chachamim done. So he says that the problem, according to him, is where the husband could do it, where he could have been made for the nether. Had I known that I could have been made for the nether, then I would have not divorced her. That's the problem, according to Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Meir says, we don't worry about that case, right? That case is not a common case, or we don't worry about it because if he could have been made for it, right, then we don't need the chachamim to be oser on him to take her back, right, because he would not be able to be mekalkel her, because he would never say yilei to yodea, because he would have known, right? He should have done the hafar up front. The fact that he didn't do it up front tells us that he's divorcing her without condition or without any remorse about why he is divorcing her. So now the Gemara deals with the last leg of the Mishnah, which is this case of the tzidan, which seems not to fit in the Mishnah. This guy says about his, if a maisa here with the guy from Tzidan, who says was divorcing his wife, right, that he did it derech a neder, and then afterwards he gets a taras nedarim done on it, and he goes ahead and he's remarrying her. So, I mean, why is it relevant to our mission? It almost has nothing to do with our mission. So that's what Gemara wants to know here. So Amar Rabbi Yisrael, maisa b'tzidan. My tana, diktani maisa. What does this maisa have anything to do with the rest of the mission? So Gemara says, of course, chasurim echsura. right? That the Mishnah is missing the transition between the first part of the Mishnah and the Maisa at the end of the Mishnah. V'achitani v'amet v'armamurim. When is this, all this machlokes that we're talking about till now? Bishan nadrahi. When she takes a nether. Aval nader ihu, if he takes a nether, yachzer, he can remarry her. That's not a problem at all. V'amar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, ma'asim nami b'tzidon. That's exactly the case. Supports that position. He says, I take a nether that I'm going to divorce you, basically. And then he divorces her. Then he got a Torah Chachamim, right? They allowed him to return her because of Tikkun Olam. Now the Gemara is going to ask, what's the Tikkun Olam here? So first of all, what's my Konim? What's the Lashon of Konim? Konim is generally used by a Lashon of Hekdesh. So what is he saying? That I Konim, that I'm going to divorce you. What does that mean? Hekdesh, that I'm going to divorce you? Doesn't make any sense here in this context. So where it says, Amrehuna ba'omer yesrub ko perot shebalom alai yimeni migashech. Right? Amigashech. So that, he's basically, there's a nether attached to the action. It's not that he's saying the nether itself is that I will divorce you. It's rather that I will trigger a nether if I don't divorce you. And what's that? I will trigger the nether that yesrub ko perot olam alai. I will trigger that if I don't divorce you. And that's what pushed him to divorce her. Ve'itirulo shiachzirenu. Pshita. Of course. I mean, what's the chiddush over here that he can take her back? I mean, why wouldn't we allow him to take it back? So Mara says, "Ma'u detem l'gzor mishum de Rabbi Natan." We'll worry about the problem of Rabbi Natan. What's the problem of Rabbi Natan? The time Rabbi Natan omer hanoder kilu bana bama. We had this in Nedarim together. Anybody who takes a nether, it's equivalent to building a bama. V'hamikaimo, and one who keeps the nether kilu ikriv ale karban. As if he's makriv a karban on this, you know, on this bama. So Kamash Malan, that we don't worry about this problem of the Avon Nedarim, right? So we don't worry about the fact that he was Mekayim his nether, that he actually took the nether, then was Mekayim the nether. We don't worry about that he's been in violation of this Rabbi Natan, and therefore we should punish him and not let him go back and remarry her. We don't say that. And again, I'll repeat there, the Gemara discusses why is it a Bama. Tosfos here talks about some sort of Gzeir Shava, but we talk about the logic behind it is that a bama, what's a bama? Bama is someone who takes a korban outside of the mikdash, right? He does it independent. He does something, he's an add-on. So he makes his own, you know, own little temple, he makes his own little bama. So do a nether. A nether is something that extends. The Torah has plenty of laws, plenty of dinim and halachot and mitzvot that are laid out. The person takes a nether, it's making something in addition to the Torah, right? So that's the equivalent of a bama. Again, I mean, mikaimo, and one who actually keeps the nether, forget about making the nether, which already extends it, but if you actually keep the nether, it shows that you're doing something more than that is required by the Torah, and that's what it means, kilu mahikriv karban alah. Right, so we saw that in the Gemara in the Dorim, just mention it again here when we see this pesukim. Now the last part of that Mishnah says, mipnei tikkun olam. So what type of tikkun olam do we have over here? My tikkun olam, ika. So I'm a Rav Sheshet HaReisha. Rav Sheshet says, the tikkun olam really references back to the first part of the Mishnah, which is, the reason we don't allow him to remarry her in all these cases is because of Tikkun Olam, either because of Kilkula or because of Prutzot. But that's nothing to do with the Seifa part of the Mishnah. It's modifying the Reisha, not the Seifa. Ravina Amar the Olam HaSeifa. No, it's modifying the Seifa, and it really reads like this. Akatani Ein Bezumi Tim Tikkun Olam. Doesn't mean Mifnei Tikkun Olam means this is Tikkun Olam, but no, this is not the problem of Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam does not deal with this issue because this is not a Tikkun Olam issue. And that's why in the Seifa he could take her back, because we don't have any Tikkun Olam issue in the Seifa. So that's how they interpret it. All right, next Mishnah. Motzi et ishto mishum ailonit. Person divorces his wife because he thinks that she's an ailonit. She's unable to bear children. Rabbi Yehuda mer lo yachzir. Rabbi Yehuda says he cannot take her back. It's under the same problem we have in the previous Mishnah, which is if he divorces her because she's an ailonit, then we find out she's not an ailonit, going to run into the same problem we had before. Chachamim say that you can, that there's no like exclusion from returning a woman when you divorce her from a lonit. If she marries another party, and then she has children from this new husband, now that she's had children, she proved that she's not what? She's not an ilonit. She's not an ilonit. She was entitled to her ksuba. Why did she lose her ksuba in the first place? What's the problem with an ailonit? Ailonit is a, quote-unquote, kiddushe ta'ut. It was kiddushin that were done on the wrong premise, because the person who married her assumed that she could bear children. The fact that she didn't bear children made it into kiddushe ta'ut. That's the case. Then she was, what, not entitled to a ksuba. Now she goes ahead and she says, listen, you know, I had children. You were wrong. Right? You divorced me, but I was not an Ilonit. I'm entitled to my ksuba. So what do we say to Rami Yehuda, Omer La? We say to her, Shtik tukuteich, yafem mi diburech. Your silence is golden here. Silence is better than speaking here, because why? If she goes ahead and proves that she's entitled to her ksuba, what does that mean? She wasn't Ilonit. If she's not Ilonit, then the get was not a good get. If it wasn't a good get, now she's in bigger trouble that she might have mamzerim. So we say to her, don't make the claim, because this claim is actually going to make put you in a much worse position than if you just remain silent and you forego your ksuba in this instance. Now, both was mentions over here, but I don't know. If it's not such a strong answer. He asks your question. She says, why aren't we, even if we tell her to be silent, why don't we make a claim on her behalf? Why don't we say, listen, she's entitled to her ksuba, or why don't we say to her, look, there's a problem here. The divorce shouldn't work. We say, there's no laws on her children. Since there's no laws on her children, it shouldn't be a problem, like what you're saying, Shoal. That once we establish the precedent that there is no yachzer, then there's no longer an issue. So he says, right, I didn't divorce you. Both the Tosfos Reed and the Ran discuss the question that you had, Shoal, which is how could it be after Rabbi Yehuda, once they were metaken that lo yachzir, when it came to a ilonit, then how do you have this case where we say shtikutech is better than right yafemi diburech? So Tosfos gave an answer. It had to do with the ksuba, and then the Tosfos Reed on Mem Zayin Amud Bet has a little piece that's a little more explicit, and the Ran too, a little more explicit than Tosfos. I'll just read it to you. He says, even though we've explicitly made it clear to him that if we find that she's not an Ilonit, right, lo yachzir, he may not return her. Meaning that's your question. Meaning that that's, even though we know that, despite that fact, it's still an issue. Why? Yochel omar mipnei safek gerashtia. I was megarish because of the safek. Below chashti b'chazirata. And I never thought about having her back. Meaning that I agreed with whatever you said. I said that. Benatati la get b'cholev. And I divorced her with a full heart. What I never anticipated was that she would give birth, then not be classified as an Ilonit, and I'd have to pay up the ksuba. If I have to pay up the ksuba, that's something that I had no intention of doing. Because had I known I would have to pay the ksuba, I would not have divorced her. So the problem is not in the takana itself, which is the Ilonit aspect, because he agreed that if she's an Ilonit, I'm not planning on taking her back ever. The issue is with the ksuba, meaning that he had no intention of ever paying this ksuba, and now when he is obligated to pay the ksuba, he says, that's not what I signed up for. Another issue, which is dealt with both by Tosfos and Rashi over here, another issue, which is an important issue, is that why does she need a get over here? Why does this woman require a get at all? I mean, the way Ilonit works is that there's a kedushe tos, meaning that the underlying premise of the Kiddushin failed. If that's the case, then it's okay, Kiddushin mi'ikara. If that's the case, what do you need a get for? The Kiddushin never worked. They were never intact. So Rashi answers and says, listen, you know, despite the fact that it's Kiddushin tos, that ein adam oseh bilato biladznus. A person doesn't make his bila biladznus, and therefore after he was boheler, the shame Kiddushin. Despite the fact that it was a Kiddushin tos, the fact that he had bila after that point of the Kiddushin, already makes it the case that he's married to her fully. So we've had this case before, and that's Gemara in Ksubas. We discussed that if a person is kones, a woman al tnai, in Kiddushin he makes a tnai, and then when it comes to Nisuin, he does not repeat the tnai from the Kiddushin. We said he's mochel al tnai, he's mochel on such a tnai, and the Nisuin is stam means that he's taking her and forgiving or overlooking any of the problems that he raised when it came to Kiddushin. Tosfos says, but, this is a big but, Tosfos says, Ilonit is excluded from that. That is true if she wasn't an Ilonit. But if she is an Ilonit, Tosfos says that it would be a Kedushe Tos. So what does Tosfos say over here? Tosfos solves the problem by saying that what actually is going on over here is that she's a Suffolk Ilonit. She can't be a Vadai Ilonit. Why? Because a Vadai Ilonit, right, very good. So how could she have children afterwards? The fact that she has children afterwards proves to you that it was always a Suffolk whether she was an Ilonit or not. Because if we knew for certain she was an Ilonit, there's no chance she would ever have children. That's the basic premise of an Ilonit, is she cannot have children. So the fact is we're dealing here is with a Suffolk Ilonit. And since it's a Suffolk Ilonit, that is why he when he divorces her, he must require a get, because we're not certain that there's a kedusha etos here. And especially afterwards, when she has children, we know for certain that it was a problem and she would need a get from the first individual. So that just explains it. The one question Tosfos asks, what about Sarah? Sarah was an Ilonit. So Sarah Yemena was an Ilonit, and we see she had children afterwards. So Tosfos makes a lie. We don't bring a proof from Maisa and Nisim. It's interesting. Just doesn't even ask the question. But it says we don't bring a proof from Sarah Yemena because that's Maisa and Nisim, and that's not the normal case. But if she was a Vadai Ilonit, there'd be nothing to talk about here. It wouldn't require a get, and obviously she wouldn't have children, and there wouldn't be nothing to talk about. The question here, and that's what Tosfos persists throughout his pshat here, is that we're talking about a Suffolk Ilonit. Because of the Sveika, she requires a get, and that's why later on he can say, had I known, I wouldn't have given you a get because of that issue. All right. Yep, later. It's Mishum Kilkula. But you're true. The fact that we force him to give a get is because of that issue also, that she can never be defined as an absolute Dilonit over here. All right. So now, let's just continue the Gemara. The Gemara says, the Memra, Rabbi Yehuda, Chayish Likulkula. That Rabbi Yehuda thinks the problem in our Mishnah is a kilkul problem, and that's why he says over here, lo yachzir, because if she's an Ilonit, and then he finds out later that she's not an Ilonit, that would undermine the get and cause the problems. Rabbonon, in our Mishnah, who say she can be machzir, lo yachayish the kilkul, they don't worry about kilkul. V'ayip chosh meinin loho. Then we heard just the opposite in their positions. The time we have in our Mishnah, motzi etisho mishim reshem ra lo yachzir, mishum neto lo yachzir, Rabbi Yehuda omer, kol neto shiyadu bo rabim lo yachzir, shlo yadu bo rabim yachzir. So we said before, what's the reason Rabbi Yehuda says that a neder al das rabim is a problem? It's because of prutzot. They're prutzot binidorim. So we see that he thinks the problem in the previous Mishnah is a problem of prutzot binidorim, and not a problem of kilkula. And yet in this Mishnah, it seems to be he thinks the problem is a problem of kilkula. So how do you reconcile between these two? Alma, Rabbanon chayish lekukula, Rabbi Yehuda lo chayish lekukula. In our previous Mishnah, it's clear that the Rabbanon were chayish lekukula, and Rabbi Yehuda was chayish for prutzot, so it's not chayish lekukula. So Alma Shmuel ipuch. Flip the Mishnah, flip the positions in our Mishnah. Va mektani seifa niseit the acher, vayula banim emeno vihito vat ktubata, am Rabbi Yehuda omer la shtikuteich yafemi diburech. So he's one of the, it's clear that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of that second piece, which is talking about a problem of Mishum Kilkula. He's worried about Kilkula. Bechlad Rabbi Yehuda, Chayish Lekilkula. So he says, no problem, Hainami Yipuch. Flip that position also, say to Rabbanan, not Rabbi Yehuda. If you're going to flip the Mishnah, this Mishnah here, flip everything in the Mishnah. Abai Amar, the Olam Lot Yipuch. Don't flip it. Rabbi Yehuda, Bahai Savala Ki Rabbi Meir, Bis Sabirla Ki Rabbi Lazar. So meaning that Rabbi Yehuda has a multiple issues with the Gemara. He holds like Rabbi Meir, and he holds like Rabbi Elazar. Right? Bitzarich, Sover Law, Ki Rabbi Elazar. Right? In the case of Tzarich, right, then he holds like who? Then he holds like Rabbi Elazar. Who are Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir before? Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir before were the positions, what Machlokas about, if the woman needs to go to a chacham to get hataras nedarim, do we say that that's the reason that we say lo yachzir? That was Rabbi Meir's position, because if a husband would be willing to take his wife to Beis Din and embarrass her, whereas Rabbi Elazar believed that no, that we don't. In that case, we don't worry about lo yachzir, because he would never take, we don't believe him. If he comes and tells us, I would have taken my wife to Beis Din and hataras nedarim, we don't believe him, because Anan Sade said people don't take their wives to Beis Din. That's considered beyond the pale in terms of what it could do. So therefore, so that means, based on this, Rabbi Yehuda is definitely chayish lekilkula. Okay? Now, by neder, the reason he's not chayish, right, because of kilkula, right, because he's talking about a case where you need hataras nedarim. In a case of hataras nedarim, he holds, like Rabbi Elazar, that a person would never take his wife to a chacham. So that's why over there, when he says that, ein adam rotzeh tizbaza ishto bebezdin, right, therefore you can't say that the problem is a problem of, right, of kilkula over there. He has to say the problem is a problem of pritzus, because the problem is a pritzusa problem. Now, she'ena tzarech hataras chacham, wait, but Rabbi Elazar has another tzad. Rabbi Elazar believes that there's a problem of kilkula. And despite the fact that there's a problem of kilkula, he says, why does he say there's a problem of kilkula? What does Rabbi Elazar says the problem is like Yishol, you just said, which is a problem of hafara. Right. So why doesn't why don't we say Rabbi Yehuda says that's the problem over here? It could be Kukula in our Mishnah. So he says because like that he holds like Rabbi Meir, that Afara is not a problem of Kukula. So he holds like Rabbi Elazar and like Rabbi Meir. He holds like Rabbi Meir that Afara is never a problem of Kukula. He holds like Rabbi Elazar that Ataras Chachamim is never a problem of Kukula because you can't take a man would never take his wife to Beis Din to have Ataras Nadarim. So what's left? Prutzos. So that's what he says. In the previous Mishnah, the problem is Prutzos, not because I don't hold Kilkula is not a problem, but there's no possibility of Kilkula in the previous Mishnah, either because a husband never takes his wife to Beis Din for Hakaras Chachamim, and I don't believe Afara, I like Rabbi Meir, I don't think Afara is a problem of Kilkula, because we say the husband would have known. He doesn't know about Afara, we don't say that. So because of that, he said the previous Mishnah is a case of Prutzos. Our Mishnah, where there is a possibility of Kilkula, then Rabbi Yehuda comes and says, I'm going to apply Kilkula over here. So that's why he's consistent. He always believes in Kilkula, just he can't come up with a case of Kilkula in the previous Mishnah. So that's how the Gemara explains it. So again, just read this quickly. Right, so then he says, Abaye Amar Lo Malo Tipuch, Rabbi Yehuda Bahai Yisavar Laka Rabbi Meir, Vesavar Laka Rabbi Lazar, Yehuda Laka Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Lazar. Bid Tzarich, if he requires a Taras Nedarim, Savar Laka Rabbi Lazar. He holds like Rabbi Lazar, who says that what? A man will not embarrass his wife and do a Taras Chachamim, so there's no question there of Kilkula. Vesheino Tzarich, if it's just Afara, then Savar Laka Rabbi Meir, who says, what? Hafara is not considered a condition of Kilkula. So Amar Rava, the Rabbi Huda, the Rabbi Huda, Kasha, the Rabbanan, no Kasha. Everybody's trying to solve the steer in Rabbi Huda. What about the steer on the Chachamim? Meaning that you left out that solution. Hello, Amar Rava, the Rabbi Huda, the Rabbi Huda, no Kasha, Kedishanina. We already explained that. Rabbanan, the Rabbanan, no Kasha, Man Chachamim. Who are the Chachamim? Rabbi Meir, the Amar Beina, Tznai Kafel. The author of the Chachamim's position is Rabbi Meir requires a Tznai Kafel. V'chachal by Eskinim, the Lokafli Tanei. Our Mishnah over here is a case where he didn't do a Tznai Kafel. He didn't do a Tznai Kafel. Then by Ilonit, there's no question of Mishum Kilkula. There was no Tznai. There's no Tznai. We don't have to worry about Kilkula. That's why over here they don't worry about Kilkula. Alright, so now next Mishnah. Hamocher at Atzmo ved Banav Lovde Kochavim. Person who sells himself and his children into slavery, basically, to non-Jews. But over the Avodah Zarah, ain't podinoto. We do not redeem him. Aval podim et banim. We save his children, but that's only lachar mitat avim, after their father dies. So what's going on here? So the Gemara says, Amar Basi, behusha macha v'shana v'shilesh. Only that about if a person is a recurring offender over here, if he sells himself on a recurring basis to over chavim, you know, first time, maybe second time we redeem him, after that we say, listen, this guy is going to just keep doing this, so we're not going to save him. And also the children, we're not going to save them until the father dies. Because guess what? If we're po to the children, you know what the next movie's going to do next time? Is going to just resell them back in. So we wait till the father's dead, and then we redeem the children to protect the children from being, you know, washed away into the land of Avodah Zarah. So now, Hanu b'nei b'nei michsei. So we had these people, these b'nei b'nei michsei. The yasfi zuzei me'ov de kachavim. They used to borrow money from non-Jews. V'lo havel hu l'mifrinu. And they didn't have the ability to repay their debts. Atu v'kagar v'lohu. Right, they came, guess what they did? The non-Jews said, you know what, you don't repay, we're going to take you guys as collateral. So they basically took them in as slaves. They took in these B'nai Bei Michsei in as slaves. After the Kamei de Rav Huna, so they came to Rav Huna, I don't know if this is the actual people they took as captives or on their behalf, whether we should redeem them. Amalu, my Yavid Luchu. Right, what can I do for them? The Mishnah says explicitly, Tanan Amocher Da'atzmo V'etbanav Dov D'Chavim and Podimoto. So how can we redeem these people? Similarly, Rabbi Ava, Vimdatainu, Rabbeinu, weren't you the one who explicitly said to us that Bahushamacha Vishana Vishilesh? That's only if they were recur offenders. Who says that they were recur offenders? He says, Amalei, Hane Miraga Rigile Davihachi. Guess what? These guys are recur offenders. This is what they did all the time. They used to borrow money, not be able to repay it, and they got taken to slavery. This was not the first time this happened. If that's the case, they're repeat offenders. The repeat offenders, we're not going to redeem them in this instance. All right, so now, Hau Gabra, right, the Zavin Nafshe Ludai. This guy sold himself into the Ludai. Now, Ludai were known to be cannibals. All right, so they not only did they take captives, but they also ate their captives. So, Ate the Kame de Rabbi Ami, so they came, it sounds like this guy himself came for Rabbi Ami. Amarle, Pirkan, right, let's get me freed here. Can you guys redeem me? Samalait's Nan, he said back to him, listen, we have a Mishnah Mochatmo, Vet Banablo de Chavim and Podimoto. Abal, Podimet Abanim, Mishum Kilkula. Listen, I can't take care of you, but, you know, the only thing is, right, that I can take care of the children. Why can't I take care of? Why can't we take care of the children? That's our mission. Because of Kukula, we're afraid that the children will come over the Avodah Zarah. Now he says something. Wait, wait. Oh, that's what the Mishnah says. But Kosher Kain Hocha Deika Katala says, what was the reason that we said by the children that we redeemed them and not the fathers? Because we want to protect the children from being washed away into Avodah Zarah. So if we're worried about their lives, right, in the end, what's the story with this guy here? This guy who's with the Ludai, his life's at risk. He's with Sakanas Tefashos. He's with Sakanas Tefashos. How is that worse than his children that we're worried about them, Kukula, going off into Avodah Zarah? So that's the case. He says, we can redeem you because there's a Sakanat Nefashot here. So Amrle Rabbanan the Rabbi Ami. So some other Rabbanan showed up and said to Rabbi Ami in the middle of this adjudication, Hi Yisrael Mumar who? This guy is not, you know, what are we redeeming this guy for? He's an Yisrael Mumar. Meaning that he violates mitzvot left and right. He's not the type of Jew that we want to redeem. We see that he eats the velo trefot and non-kosher items. Fine, let's say that he didn't do it lahachis. It's not Yisrael Mumar lahachis. He just has his yetzara got the better of him, so he did it. So he says, Amulei vazimna deika etera visura kamei. Now, what's the difference between Lateyavon? Lateyavon is a person who has a taiva for it, and when there's no available heter, he'll go ahead and eat Isur. But if he's faced with the choice of heter and Isur, he will always pick heter. When it comes to Mumar lahachis, who wants to do it on purpose to show that he doesn't care or that he's going to violate the mitzvah, then even in the face of heter, he will pick Isur. He says, listen, we saw this guy many times in the choice between kosher and non-kosher, and he picked non-kosher despite that fact. So David says, the Shavik HaTera of Achli Isurai, they left the kosher food, and he took the non-kosher stuff. So really, Zil says to this guy, take a hike. Lo, kashafkili da'af arkinech. They're not going to let me, redeem you. I mean, that you're a problematic. I can't redeem you here. You know, maybe it's a class of fun, but you're an Yisrael Mumar. We have numerous problems. Here's a person who's selling himself away to Ovdei Chachamim. Top of that, how smart could he be? He sells himself to a cannibal. Right? And then on top of that, he's an Yisrael Mumar. Right? So what time, he came to beg to be I did it recurring times, or I was a repeat offender, but I'm in danger now, please redeem me. And then it turns out he's an Yisrael Mumar, Lahachis. So Rabbi Ami said already, I can't, you know, if I'm going to violate this, Takanas Chachamim, I can only do this if it was talking about someone to Shomer Torah Mitzvos. Someone who is worthy of being redeemed. This person's not, you know, it's not somebody that we're going to make an effort to redeem them. All right, so that's, we'll stop over here.